Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Save big on your Labor Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app.
Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Matt Leib.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Pod Yourself a Gun.
A Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. Very excited for all of you out there joining us for season 6A of The Sopranos. This is very exciting. Just wanted to remind everyone up top, give us 5 stars and a review on the Apple podcast store. I've noticed we've gotten a lot of good reviews that have come in the last month while we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but not nearly enough. And I won't be happy until we have thousands of them. Isn't that right, Vince?
That's right. I won't be happy either. I'll continue to be dissatisfied.
Yeah. Just going to be sad until that shit just reaches to the top of the charts. So please do that. Also, a reminder, obviously, patreon.com/frogcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. I just want to say up top, I know we don't do shout outs to the end, but we got a $100 patron a couple weeks ago. Named Jason, and the $100 tier was kind of set up sort of as a joke. I mean, it was kind of like, hey, if you do this for a while, then I'll fly over to your, wherever you live, and I'll set up a stand up show, and I'll do comedy. And then COVID happened, and I was like, well, that was probably a stupid idea anyways. I wasn't even gonna do that. But I kind of left the tier up, and so now I don't really know what to do. Jason,
fly to that guy's city and do stand up.
Or I could just be like,
you're a liar.
That's true, but I just want to say instead, I dedicate this episode to you, Jason, and your huge fat dong, which I think is probably really hot. You probably have a really good dick. And you get it in regularly and often, and people like you as a person, but they also, everyone wants to fuck. I'm doing a bad job. Vince, what do you think about Jason, our $100 patron?
He's great. I feel like you should drive to his town and do stand up there, but
You're really fucking up my life right now, dude. Follow me on this journey of telling Jason that he's got a good dick,
Jason,
or something.
You're so good looking.
Yeah,
great job.
You're a good looking guy. Thank you for being hot, Jason. And just answer my DM on Patreon, and maybe I will go to your city. I don't know. Maybe I hope your city is like Sherman Oaks. You're just someone who believes that the Valley is a different city. Anyways, that's enough of the intro shit, right?
Sure. Well, I'm gonna do a shout out to my buddy DP, who's has his first week of chemo this week. So I just wanted to give him hang in there buddy,
hang in there, dude. Chemo is fun, or is not fun. You've got a good dick too. It's strong and people like it. So hang in there, DP, double penetration.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah, it's a good ass name for someone with a big dick. Anyways, today we are talking about, from season 6A of The Sopranos, episode 1, Members Only, and our guest, you know him from the Sit Down podcast. Also, he's going to be in Atlanta November 19th at the Roll Call Theater with Adam Friedland. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Racine is here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, thanks for coming on, man. We're very excited to have you to talk about some Sopranos shit.
Jason should be giving $100 a month to the guy with cancer, don't you think?
Yeah, like a GoFundMe, like a Patreon. Yeah. I mean,
he could do that as like a separate thing, but I mean, I feel like he's, by supporting our podcast, he's supporting the cancer guy.
Yeah. That's right.
In his entertainment.
In like an indirect way.
In an indirect way, yeah. It's a trickle-down economics of podcasting where you give money to the podcast, and hopefully that podcast can help affect change, you know?
Yeah.
That is the funny thing about podcasting. You never really know what you mean to people. Because there was a girl who used to give me $50 a month on Patreon, and she was like, I know this is probably a lot of money, but I really like the show, and the show really means a lot to me. And I have no idea where she is right now. I haven't heard from her in a long time. I hope she's
okay.
But
do you still get the money?
I don't think so.
Oh, she canceled eventually.
I think she's probably still canceled or something. I'm sure she's, yeah.
She's probably alive.
I hope she's still alive. I hope so.
That would suck, dude, if like she gave $50 bucks a month and it was like part of like, you know, like when you're bipolar, you go through like a manic episode where you start giving away all your money.
Right.
You just give it to a bunch of podcasts that you like.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm happy to benefit off of someone's mania, sure. But you know.
And we're all like, oh, I don't know. I thought she was fine.
Yeah.
I thought she was rich or something.
Yeah. I really hope she didn't need the money.
Yeah. I hope she didn't, yeah.
That's like 80% of casinos takes come from like degenerate gamblers with like a legitimate addiction or something like that.
Is that true?
Wow. So, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, you know, that's just, maybe that's how patrons work too, where it's just like, you know, 80% of our patrons are in the manic phase of.
Yeah,
I think so. It's a very interesting relationship that you have with your patrons, because it's like it's great. It's great that people, you know, like give you money, but then there's sometimes you just want to be like, is everything okay over there?
Yeah, that's true. There is part of me that goes like, you know, because some people they'll sub for like a couple of months and then they'll leave, and their reason behind it is like, oh, you know, I just don't have any money. And then they'll come back like a month later and you're like, I don't think you have the money to keep doing this, man. Like, just DM me. I'll just send you the MP3 file.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I don't want anyone to, I don't want to profit too much off of people's depression. But at the same time, you know,
hey, someone's going to do it.
Someone's got to do it.
Why not us? Yeah.
It's going to be someone else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If it's not, it'll be Joe Rogan, and he's got enough money.
Yeah.
Right.
He didn't.
Yeah, I don't think either one of our fan bases has like a lot of disposable income, unfortunately.
I know. It's funny because Francesca's podcast, my fiance, she does like a political one. Mm-hmm. And I can tell that she has a more higher class listenership, because she doesn't have as many patrons as we do, but she has almost the exact same amount of money.
Right.
And it's just a lot of people who are like, they have the ability to get 20
bucks. You're
doing
really good work. You're doing really.
It's, you know, it's, well, look, hey, you know.
We just need to talk about entrepreneurship a little more.
Yes.
And, you know,
crypto.
The hustle mindset, and, you know, maybe we'll get some more of those self-starters.
Yeah. So
once you're married, it's both your Patreons.
I know. That's why I keep telling her that. I'm
so
like,
that's,
you know,
your Patreon once you get married.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, we got to split that Patreon 50-50, right? And she's like, nah, but that's fine. Is that a baby in the background?
No. Yes, but his mom should be home any minute now. I don't know.
Tell me about your baby, Mike. Do you want to talk about your baby on the podcast or not really?
I don't really want to. I was hoping he'd be okay. Let me just go check on him real quick.
Yeah, please.
His fucking mother's supposed to be home.
Oh, God damn, mom.
Women.
I'm going to start calling my wife my son's mother.
Yeah.
You know? Hold on. Give me one second.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
That's how I talk to my son too. What's the matter? Come on, what's your problem now?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Are you crying again? Ugh.
You know what I love about your baby?
What's that?
Is your baby? Your baby looks like a mafia baby.
Mm-hmm.
You have the most mafia ass looking baby I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, he has a furrowed brow and a receding hairline. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had him watching YouTube, and I had him watching the show called Hey Bear.
Yeah.
And then it automatically goes to fucking Elmo when that's over. It doesn't play more Hey Bear. So I had to go and reset the... Wait, let me grab him.
Oh.
God.
All
right. Mom's home. All right, we're good.
Oh, it's all good.
She's a minute late.
That is...
My son's mother is home, so that's good.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, so...
Elmo has like a monopoly on YouTube. It's annoying.
I mean, I'm glad that that's where the algorithm went. Like, it'd be so funny if you came back and it's just an alt-right channel and it's just talking about the fall of Western civilization.
Dude, I sent you that video of my 8-year-old stepson and his cousin, and I'm convinced what they were watching was North Korean propaganda. It was like a war movie, like in Korean without subtitles. And I'm like, what are you guys watching? And they're just sitting there transfixed for like 10
they're like,
minutes.
I don't know. It was just, that was what was next.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
We were watching, you know, Chippendale Rescue Rangers, and it immediately went into a whole thing about how capitalist South Korea needed to be destroyed. All right. Well, Mike. Let's talk about The Sopranos, because this is technically
the baby's
a Sopranos.
Gone.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, don't worry about it. You know, life is beautiful. So, do you like The Sopranos?
Yes, I do. I like The Sopranos a lot. And I'm also Italian, and I'm proud to be Italian, unlike a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're a proud Italian American.
Yeah.
So when you watched the show, The Sopranos, did you first watch it because you were like, I just need to see some Italian-American representation on TV?
Yeah, I think so. It had been a while, you know, since they gave us anything. And now they're back to not giving us anything, and we're back, you know, to podcasting. But yeah, we did have a nice little run there in the early 2000s. Also, I do remember people, when it came out, people being like upset by it, like that it didn't portray. And they do that on the show in season one. They have like a Melfi's family is like, it's not they don't portray us correctly.
Yeah.
There's like a whole thing. There
oh, it's great. Yeah. She's sitting around and they're all going like, you know, they don't give us good, decent portrayals of hardworking Italian Americans like us, a bunch of fucking pseudo intellectuals, academics who make money just telling people that they're sad.
Right. And it's like, who wants to watch somebody like deliver coal for 2 hours? You know, it's like, I think that'd be a tough thing to make a movie out of.
Yeah.
We do it about the mafia because it's, the mafia, like the stakes are higher. It's, you know, more life and death. But,
there's this guy, Rico. He drives a bus. And he's a good guy. We made a show about him.
It's
called Rico
Church.
Yeah, Rico the bus driver.
And he loves those kids. He takes them from point A to point B. And
never
every
any
week.
Problems. Always wears his seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
Every day for lunch, he brings a sandwich that his wife made.
Do you remember in like 1998, this Jay Moore movie came out? It was like a spoof movie called Mafia.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember like being out to dinner with my dad and my grandmother, and my dad being like, "Yeah, Mom, you know that movie Mafia that came out? Yeah, they're saying it doesn't portray Italians very well." And it was literally like a spoof movie with like there's like a horse throwing a lady farts and a building falls down.
Yeah, it was
and
like
somebody saw that and they're like, "No."
Yeah. No, we don't
they're
do
making
that.
Us look bad.
I remember one incredible sequence from that movie, which is that it's like a funeral scene and they're somber, like the pallbearers are somberly carrying the casket out to the gravesite and they get to the gravesite and they tip the guy over into the casket and there's some guy there with a hose that sprays the casket down after the falls out of it. I was like, that's a good bit. I like that.
Yeah. Do you have is there anyone on The Sopranos? Like, do you have a favorite character or one that you relate to the most or anything?
I guess I like Johnny Sack, even though everybody kind of has their like their admirable moments and their terrible moments, you know. So like, there's nobody who's
no one's perfect.
Who you can really, except I guess maybe Carmella's therapist in season 3.
Oh yeah, that was the best.
That guy was cool.
Yeah,
But yeah, I like that Johnny Sack doesn't cheat on his wife, you know.
You like that he's a wife guy.
That's good. I like that he's a wife guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important to commit yourself to you know, to one woman.
He's
in
definitely
the eyes of God.
He's the first I love my large wife guy, which is mm-hmm. like really mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. so before its time, you know? Like mm-hmm. it was before
I mean, he doesn't make a big
Twitter.
Thing about it, like he doesn't talk about it. He just does it. Like, he leads by example, which is nice.
His weight never bothered her.
Yeah.
Never bothered him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful in a way because the physics of it.
Yeah. He's got me blocked on Twitter, by the way, because I tweeted the actor because I tweeted something about how, like, the guy who played Johnny Sack or like, Johnny Sack is a better person than, like, the guy who plays him. Just, like, a pretty innocuous tweet. And then, like, all these Compound Media fans were like snitching on me and they were like, "This, hey, Vincent Curatola, this guy's talking shit about you." And then this one guy was like being really vocal about it. And I was like, "You're a fucking snitch." And he was like, "Oh, yeah, you're talking about a guy I like. I think I'm going to let him know." And then Vincent Curatola blocked both of us.
Oh, good. That's good.
Yeah. This guy thought he was going to have, like, you know. He's going to be like best friends with Johnny Sack.
Oh, I love that. Cause, like, you know, he has some principles. He was like, "Well, I don't want anyone, you know, bad mouthing me. And I also do not associate with snitches."
I don't associate with
snitches.
Exactly.
Snitch taggers are the lowest form of life on earth. And, and I'm just telling you in advance, if any of our listeners pull that shit, you're going to be blocked too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't like being, someone snitch tagged me recently. But they were snitching on someone else who called me a Costco brand Adam Driver, which I was like, that's not, you know, that's accurate. And also I don't mind being compared to Adam Driver, but it was also like one of those things where it's like, you know, I was living my life fine, not knowing that someone was making fun of me on the internet. You don't have to,
of course.
Yeah.
You don't
of
have
course.
To tell me that. It's fucked up. But this is not an Adam Driver snitch tag podcast. No, this is a Sopranos podcast. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first listening to the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, today we are talking about from season 6A of The Sopranos, episode 1, Members Only, which premiered on March 12th, 2006. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
Gene Pontecorvo makes a final break from the mob life while Junior's paranoid delusions could be the end of Tony.
Wow, yes.
Spoiler much? Jeez.
Spoiler much. And what was happening at the time that the episode came out?
And if you don't mind me asking, what were you guys doing in 2006? Because I feel like 2006 was kind of like a formative year for me.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, 2006 for me, I was in college and I was just watching The Sopranos. I think this is actually the season where I first started watching The Sopranos like live, like when it was on TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this was so formative in that sense. Other than that, I mean, what was I doing? I was on a lot of drugs. I was mostly on opiates. That's what I was doing in 2006.
Yeah, I think I was fresh out of college, just working a bunch of series of shit jobs. But
was this when you were at?
Oh, back up,
dude! You can't say that on the show. I got a non-disclosure.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm gonna beep it out, and it'll be great.
Yeah. I think that was around that time. Yeah. That was probably the job, and then you know, just partying balls. Did a lot of that. Yeah. I feel like aughts were just like, all right, everything sucks, so get drunk. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time to be an addict because it was just like everything like around you, surrounding you in the world was just bad enough that I was like, yeah, I would like to numb myself out.
Yeah.
What was happening with you?
I started stand up that year. I was going to college and I started doing bringer shows at this club. And I was actually going to college in North Jersey. At Montclair State. So North,
yeah.
So this the area that Sopranos takes place in is very kind of like close to my heart.
I
so
helped I was, yeah. move someone into the dorms at Montclair State once.
Oh, really?
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you a mover?
No. I was okay. I was going to Columbia and I had a girlfriend. Her friend was her friend's like best friend had just gotten into Montclair State or something, and so we like helped move her into. I can't remember. Maybe it was out of the dorms. One of the two.
Wow, you're a good boyfriend. You're helping a friend of the girl.
Friend of the girl you dated.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't a lot of stuff. It was like two things.
Sure.
Must have been good pussy though. I'm sorry. So you were starting stand up at that time.
I started stand up and then I kind of made the decision to drop out of college and I moved to New York the following year. And I was also working for like a kind of a scam home improvement company where I was setting appointments for the sales guys to go in and rip people off.
You're finding the leads. You're giving them the good leads.
Yeah. I was getting the leads. Yeah.
2006 was the time where I think everyone probably had at least one job that ended up being some sort of pyramid scheme. Like that, I feel like that's when a friend of the pod, Joe Sinclitico, was working for, didn't he work for like Trump College?
Trump University. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was, yeah. Like their whole thing was sending him like information about how to like start an online business.
Yeah.
And at one point he was talking to this old lady that clearly like didn't know anything about the internet, and he he eventually was like, yeah, I don't really think you need this, and his manager was listening to the call as a training call, and he was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like,
yeah.
And he's like, I don't want to like take all her money, she didn't need it, and he goes, she would have done the same to you, which I feel like what is the mindset of all boiler room places. Yeah,
sure.
It is dog eat dog
and
out
I think,
there.
Like on a larger, in a larger sense, I like the main thing I remember about the aughts, like pre-financial crisis, was just that there was like free bullshit money everywhere, and
yes,
if you weren't like making it, you felt like an idiot, and also that you know, like they, like if you weren't doing something slightly shady to make a bunch of money, like you were kind of a dumbass square.
It was a time when all of your dumbest friends were getting rich on like, you know,
I just
some
bought
real
a house
estate
from
scam.
Being a mortgage broker. Like there in California, everybody was a mortgage broker
and buying Hummers.
Yeah, exactly. But what else was happening at the time that this episode came
Matt,
out?
Matt, I think what you're trying to say is that, you know, we have to have context for all culture. We can't evaluate a show outside of the context in which it was released. And for that, we have the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk, daddy, daddy, bop, bop, shoo, bop. Remember then.
Remember when. Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
So I'll start with some serious stuff. March 12, 2006, a few things that happened. Six car bombs exploded in Sadr City, killing at least 46 people.
Fun.
Senator Russ Feingold announced that he will introduce a motion of censure against George W. Bush over for approving the domestic wiretaps without a court order, and you know, obviously it worked. He felt really bad, and
he
decided to cancel the Patriot Act, and everything's
and now
we don't have any surveillance at all, so it worked out great.
You know, that's people say that the you know, Senate doesn't work, but it worked then.
And then, you know, we got our fun story, which is about the headline is from the New York Post. Headline: The Contender, Vin Diesel lookalike, the early Idol fave.
What?
He's a rocker stepdad, and he might be too good for American Idol. Chris Daughtry, pronounced Daughtry, has already proved Simon Cowell wrong time and time again, and we're only down to the final 12. If the bald-headed rocker can hold on long enough, he could be the next Bo Bice or even Kelly Clarkson.
Who's I know Kelly Clarkson. I know that one. I think I at this point in my life, I had completely tuned out of American Idol.
I vaguely remember the name Bo Bice, but like if you told me he was like a Fox News talking head, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, that could be
it. Rumors have already circulated on the internet that the North Carolina native has been asked to replace the lead singer of Fuel after his stunning performance of Hemorrhage.
Nice.
We all remember when Daughtry almost became the lead singer of Fuel, don't we?
Yeah.
Don't we, folks?
Don't we, folks?
That song Hemorrhage
who,
that we all
won that year.
Taylor Hicks actually won the season of season of American Idol.
And went on to a beautiful career.
Yeah,
doing,
we all remember him.
Doing pop blues that we all loved.
And then I think Bo Bice came in second place, right?
I mean, it sounds right. I'm trying to remember who Bo Bice was, but
Carrie Underwood beat him.
Yeah, that's right.
The top movies in the country were Failure to Launch, The Shaggy Dog, The Hills Have Eyes, 16 Blocks, and Madea's Family Reunion, which, this 2006 was a cultural wasteland, and I think top five really underlines it. The top pop song was Check On It by Beyonce featuring Slim Thug.
No idea either.
The top rock song was Animals by Nickelback.
So that was what was going on at the time that this episode came out. There was no good cultural output happening at the time other than The Sopranos. Good to know.
Departed won Best Picture, I think.
That was good. Basically, the only good things were, like mafia movies. That was...
Yeah.
Mafia content was having a renaissance at the time. Let's get into the episode now. Vince, you already read the synopsis about Gene Pontecorvo making a break from the mob, and that's boring. Which is why I have a Bada B story for you, and it explains all of the stories that are happening.
We can't wait. We all can't wait, Matt. Just lay
this
it on
is going to be one of the stranger ones that I've done. I don't know if anyone actually knows this song or if it's just something that I liked at the time. Enjoy.
Tony is finally shot by his Uncle June. Junior, he hides all those ghosts in the closet. Tony should have put him into a nursing home.
All right, well, that was
I liked
that was
it.
Just that was just the chorus of it, but that is, I'm not gonna subject you guys to the whole thing. If you want to hear the whole song, you just stick around to the end of the episode. You know how it goes. So this is the episode of The Sopranos where we've got Gene Pontecorvo getting $2 million in a bequeathment and trying to quit the mafia. We've got Hesh and his son-in-law Eli getting beat up by Jerry the hairdo Torchiano, and of course we have
name.
Oh, the hairdo is fantastic. And then we have of course Junior going a bit Stu Nod and thinking that he is being hunted by Pussy Malenga, who is a guy who we haven't seen since the first season, who we never really actually, he was on TV a little bit in the first season.
I have
season,
a pitch for a Sopranos prequel movie called The Many Pussies of Newark. Just to go into the background of all the gangsters that are nicknamed Pussy in the Sopranos universe. I think that's...
Yeah. I mean, there's at least two. We got Big Pussy, we got Little Pussy. There's probably a Medium Pussy out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Junior thinks that
Harry Pussy.
There's Harry Pussy. There's Shave Pussy. There's Wet Shave. Pussy. There's Dry Pussy.
Shave Pussy, Sister Nino from
Tommy Wet Pussy Bombadieri Bombolino.
Yeah, you gotta admire, like, I don't know, a culture in which you're so stuck on your generation's definition of the word pussy that you're like, I'm not changing it just because other people made it mean vagina.
Well, that was great in The Many Saints where the guy's like, wait, your name's Pussy? And he's just like, he just says, yeah, and smiles. And they never explained the nickname further than that. I was like, what the? Okay. Why even bring it up?
But I thought it was because he was a cat burglar.
Oh, I like that as a theory. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like a pussy cat. I mean, it just seems like once people started to use it to talk about vaginas, that they would be like, I'd like a change of nickname, please.
Right,
like how do you? I don't even know.
Nope.
How do you do that?
No, nope. There is no filing for that. You
got to go to the DMV, and you got to go.
You're stuck with it.
I would like to change my mafia nickname, please.
You're snot boogie for life because you had a runny nose one time.
Exactly. But yeah, let's get into this.
My name
episode.
Was Big Labia because I was a labor organizer, and then they started calling it the labia.
So, general thoughts on this episode. Vince, what'd you think?
I mean, solid episode. I think David Chase definitely gives a hat tip that he's going to go super self-indulgent in this season at the beginning. He's like, the first line of the season six is, nobody ever went broke underestimating the American public. Which is apropos of nothing.
Public.
Like he's clearly just talking to the audience like, Hey idiots, fuck yourselves. I'm going to do what I want in this season. But I think that sort of starts with later episodes. This one's sort of just a solid, middle tier Sopranos episode to me.
Yeah. I think it's a good opening. Mike, did you like this episode?
Yeah, I really liked it. This is maybe my third or fourth time watching it. And, I don't know. I always kind of felt like season 6A is arguably the worst season whenever I rank them. That's just
right.
The season that's like the least memorable. And it's also, I think, very tedious. And the season does kind of feel like, David Chase trying to be like, Tony is bad. Tony Soprano is bad.
Yeah.
Don't stop putting up posters of him in your house. Stop idolizing him. They're really trying to like drive the point home that Tony is an asshole.
The opening line being no one ever went broke underestimating the taste of the American public and then having Agent Harris immediately vomit is, I think you're exactly right, Vince. That is David Chase just being like, you guys are fucking hogs.
Yeah.
And you're going to eat this. You're going to eat up the vomit. I am spewing out for you. It's I've never seen such hatred.
It's also
from a TV creator. Yeah.
The puking felt like a callback to remember when he did like the misdirect where was it Tony who thought he got food poisoning from the Indian food?
And then
this time it's just like, oh yeah, he was in Pakistan. Of course he got he got a parasite. And you're like, all right, well.
Yeah, it is the strangest opening because then right after that, then we've got the fucking annoying ass like Buddhist spoken word montage.
I looked that up. It's actually William Burroughs, but same difference.
Okay, yeah, it's a poem set to music.
Yeah.
And this is like,
he's doing an art and you can either respect it if you're not a hog, or you can just shut up.
Yeah. I mean, and you get a little, snippet into what's going on with these characters, because this season is set 2 years after the finale of the last season. And so we've got Janice is breastfeeding, her new daughter, and just dead eyed. Realizing she hates being a mother, just like her mother before her. You got Bobby playing with toy trains and a weird Nesquik product placement.
The toy trains, just excellent. I mean, that's like
I love that.
The perfect button to Bobby Bacala's whole character.
Yeah,
is that he's like, a toy trains guy.
He's an enthusiast of model trains. Then you see Gene Pontecorvo opening a letter with his wife and, hugging. He's just been bequeathed a bunch of money. You see Meadow doing a sexy dance in front of Finn, which, yes, please. More of that. Ray Curto on a treadmill, and then AJ goofing off in class, and then ending all with Carmella having a dream sequence in the in her spec house, and where Aid is standing there next to her smoking a cigarette. And it's like, hey, what happened to Aid? And then she wakes up. So yeah, that's our opening scene. And listen, I'm a big fan of opening montages, and I feel like this is as good as the other ones. I don't know, David Chase with his music choices sometimes, I'm just like, because he did it in Many Saints too, where he had like a Gil Scott Heron poem set to like dance techno-y music or whatever, and it just doesn't work.
Not to mention a bongo sequence. You forgot the bongo spoken word sequence.
Oh, in Many Saints?
Yep.
Yeah, that was great. So storylines. We got a few in here. I think we should start with Gene. I think Gene is one of the bigger storylines in here.
All I could think about when I was watching this was poor Robert Finaro, who plays Gene Pontecorvo. He's probably reading the script. He's like, ah, finally, my character gets a big arc, and then he gets like the last few pages. He's like, what the fuck?
And then the urine trickles down his leg right after he. I have a soft spot for Eugene because he's not really in the show that much. He's in it briefly in, I think, like season 3 or season 4. And then he has that that moment at the construction site where he hits little Paulie with the – that's very fun because there's a fun quality to him where they're like, you know, breaking balls until Paulie calls him gay.
Right.
And then he has to, you know, smash a bottle in his face.
It's the law. He has to.
He has to,
Yeah, that actor – I mean, he's got a perfect face. Like his whole
–
He looks great, I don't think he'd acted before this. I think he's in like maybe a couple roles afterwards,
really?
Which, and I don't know much about him, but it makes me think that he was just kind of a mafioso looking guy that they correctly assumed would be able to pull off this role.
I think I saw him in a New York Lottery commercial a couple of years ago where he plays like a pizza guy. He's like picks up the phone. He goes, Sal's Pizza. But I used to be the doorman at Caroline's. That was my first job when I moved to New York. And it's like I met my wife. Yeah. And Rabu Fernara was also the doorman there. And so was Idris Elba for a little bit, I think.
What?
So little Caroline's doorman club.
Jesus Christ. Idris Elba was the door guy at Caroline's?
I'm pretty sure.
That's fucking cool.
Was Idris Elba the door guy at Caroline's? Yeah, he was.
My favorite.
Wow.
My wife worked there for like 10 years.
My wife.
Wow.
That's awesome. My favorite. Sorry, I had to do it. My favorite thing like that was there was like a barbershop that was just a few blocks north of where I was living in Morningside Heights. And you know how the barbershops have like the pictures of people like in the different haircuts that you can that you can have? And one of the haircut models was Tracy Morgan.
Right.
You could just pick. I'd like the Tracy Morgan.
No, but this was like pre-fame Tracy Morgan.
Oh, really?
Wow. Well, a job's a job, man. I would take it. It's like, I remember like a few years after watching The Room, I was like flipping through. I don't know why I was looking through a catalog, but it was like a low grade, you know, like clothing catalog. And I saw the guy who played Mark. You know, that actor, Greg Sestero. And I was just like, hey, he's still getting work. That's good.
We should have Greg Sestero on the show. I have his phone number.
Yeah, well, call him up, dude. Fuck, what are you doing?
We all have his phone number.
Yeah, just trying to brag about a guy who just gives out his phone number on Twitter.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So Gene Pontecorvo, he goes to visit Tony at the Bing, and he tells him he just inherited $2 million, from, his aunt who was married to, Victor Borga's agent. and he asks if he could please quit the mafia.
Yeah.
And, I have a clip of that.
She left me an inheritance, Tony.
Just over $2 million.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Make sure you invest it.
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about. I was thinking about buying a place in Fort Myers. Retiring, actually.
Retiring? What are you, a hockey player? You took an oath, Gene. There's no retiring from this.
Well, I thought about that. And there was Joe Bananas.
Come on. Huh?
It just... We go back a long way, Tom.
Yeah, we do. Fucking CYO basketball. You believe that?
That is that's a movie I want to see. I want to see young Tony Soprano doing CYO basketball with Gene Pontecorvo. I think that would be a lot of fun.
And it's just a sports movie. It's just like a Disney Channel style sports movie where they have to play a Seton Hall prep or something.
Oh, I would love that. But yeah, so like this is the first time we actually see some like they're really developing the character of Gene Pontecorvo. Like all we know from him so far is he's the guy.
He's not gay.
Yeah, he's not gay, and he'll beat your ass if you even joke about it. He's like, you know,
and he's got a wife that's always nagging, just chewing him down to a little nub. Jeez,
exactly,
women.
Yeah. Women be like that, though, huh, guys? And it's great because, I mean, you say that he's, you know, maybe wasn't much of a, like, he wasn't an actor when he got this role, but this is, he does a great job. I mean, he kind of becomes like the Willie Loman of The Sopranos. Like, you just feel so awful for him being in the situation, which is, you know, is essentially... You could see it as like allegorical to like any kind of like some person who's in some sort of working class job where they just are like they're beholden to their boss more than anything else, and he's just like, oh gosh, I just want to be free. It's just like
it's all they know.
Yeah, and it really is like it's a death of a salesman like arc that he does have. I mean, it is what they're essentially doing with his character there, where he's just like, the only way that my family can be free of me and all of this, like, you know, this toxic lifestyle that's destroying all of them, is for me to take my own life. So it is.
And to Mike's point, it's really like, it really underlines that, yeah, Tony's not a good guy. You're not allowed to think that Tony's not a bad guy. I mean, it's also sort of about, difficulties onboarding in the mafia. Because, like, if this guy leaves, you got one fewer soldier. And and who are you going to find?
Yeah.
Who's going to replace him? His large son? No, the guy's on heroin.
Yeah. The Biff Loman character of his son is great. Like,
I like how he just has like a random like giant meathead of a son. That's crazy.
Yeah. How did he get that? You're just looking at him and he's just like, who's genes? they don't really do much with his Biff Loman ass son other than like make him a fucking hostile, you know, junkie. But it works because you can tell that it's like, I don't know, in some way tied to all of these people have this collateral damage from the life that they're living that you see in their family dynamics. And
So him asking to leave the mafia, is that like a reasonable request or is that like crazy? I couldn't really kind of
they've let certain people retire. Like, it's been done, but it's not like a regular thing.
I mean, what I love is that, like, the example he chooses is someone named Joe Bananas, and it just sucks to have that nickname as your example. It was like, well, in the case of, like, Lupertazzi v. Bananas, there is a precedent set that I can't...
What about Joey Coconut Bra? Hey, let him retire.
Yeah, Joey Coconut Bra actually retired in 83.
Your
it's
Honor,
true.
Do I have to cite the case of Big Pussy v.
Sopping Wet Pussy?
Yeah,
it is. I guess it's not something that is usually done. Like, there's no retiring from this, is what he says. And part of me is like, well, I mean, what happens if you're like, if you just don't show up to work? Do they just kill you if you just stop working, right? Like, someone will murder you.
Or they'll probably find you. I would imagine they'd have ways of finding you.
Yeah. Right? I mean, but like if you like, let's say you just like keep hanging out and someone's like, hey, he's not making his collections, and you just go, I don't want to do it anymore. I'll get someone else to do it. Like, are they going to be like, pick up the envelope or we'll fucking kill you?
No, yeah, pretty much.
He should have got himself fired. That would have been a better move.
Yeah. You should. That's the thing. You don't retire. You just be incompetent, and they'll just be like, yeah, Gene, you just do whatever, man. Don't worry about it.
He just starts wearing Champion tracksuits instead of Fila. Like, what are you doing? That's not the uniform.
That's a delicate line you got to skate between, you know, getting nudged aside and getting whacked. Like, it's hard to thread that needle.
Yeah. So, you know, Gene really wants to move to Florida, you know, and retire. And he and his wife have like found this beautiful place that they're going to get. But, you know, Tony is being kind of cagey about whether or not he's going to do it. And there's kind of a parallel storyline with Ray Curto. Ray has been a rat since his introduction on the show. And I love that the scene where Ray Curto dies, he's in the car talking with Agent San Severino, which is the same woman who basically is responsible for the death of Adriana. And he's in the middle of like giving her a tape and trying to explain what happened on the tape. And then he just dies right in front of her. And you see this look in San Severino's eyes, which is just like, fuck, I'm really bad at this job.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, all of my informants keep dying.
Yeah, I mean, he just got through saying like, yeah, it's a little hard to hear, but I'd be willing to testify. And she's like, god damn it.
But then we have a wonderful smash cut to funeral. Mm-hmm. Everyone's, you know, looking over Ray Curto's body and being like, he's the last of a dying breed. Yeah. Everyone else is a rat, but this guy was a stand-up fella.
Everyone looking sad. Frankie Valli's there for some reason. Just classic Jersey funeral.
Yeah.
Right. He comes to, if you reach a certain level of Frankie Valli shows up at your funeral.
Yeah.
Of Italianness, yeah. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, but the thing I love about the show is that, like, yeah, Raymond's a rat the whole time, but you never really find out. And at the funeral, they're like, oh, you know, like, what a stand-up guy. And these things are never revealed. And so much of the show is that. People lying to each other, and it never comes to light. And that's why I kind of hated The Many Saints of Newark so much, because there's that scene at the beach where she, you know, like, confesses to him. I don't know if you want me to spoil the movie or not.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
Where she confesses to Dickie that she's
sleeping with someone else, and it's a black man, and it's your mortal enemy.
And it's your enemy. Yeah. And she's let me just tell him that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Now that we're on this secluded beach together, what if I just laid all my cards on the table?
Yeah. Oh, you're in the mafia? I'm fucking your black enemy. Yeah. like that's gonna be and then so like to me that was where the movie kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the show, like, even another level of that is that we find out that that Gene Pontecorvo is basically a rat also.
You find out that one of the many reasons that he's not going to be able to do this Florida thing is that not only is Tony not letting him out of it, despite the fact that he does a hit for Chris, who is a captain now. And thinks like, okay, this will get me, you know, I'm getting in good with Tony by doing this hit. And then, you know, Syl pulls him aside later and says that Florida thing is a no-go. You know, he's trying to explain it to his wife, and then he gets a call, and it's the FBI, and they're like, you can't leave. Among your friends is where you're useful.
Yeah.
And it's
Tony
just,
doesn't even have the balls to tell him that he can't go. He has Sylvia.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and Sylvia won't even look him in the eye. I mean, it's like, I was watching this movie, and I was like, why would anybody want to be in the mafia?
Yeah. It's the ultimate, like, you know, manager or, like, boss move, like, where your boss is, like, they're not the one to tell you that your PTO wasn't approved, you know? Mm-hmm. It's always, like, some
like
Silvio.
Assistant manager, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Assistant manager who's like, oh, no, you have to work Thanksgiving. And, you know, it's... And it sucks because, you know, FBI is also telling him that he can't leave.
Summertime and the living
is thirsty. At least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on Earth. Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent, and it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say, this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the US, and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water.
Save big on your Labor Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So he's trapped. His wife really wants this house in Florida. And he is looking at pictures of his beautiful family. And his fucking junkie son. And he decides there is only one way out. So he pulls a Willie Loman and he kills himself to free his family. And it is like one of the most brutal death scenes, I think, in the series. They show the entire process of him hanging himself, where he's just like, you know, like pulling at it, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's just really, really brutal. And then cherry on top, he pisses himself. And yeah. Oh, they really did him dirty, man. It's not nice.
If he was an informant, he's probably going to jail anyway, right?
I think if you're informing because you have worked out a deal in which you get some sort of immunity. So he's not, you know, going to go to jail, but I think, you know, once, yeah.
He couldn't wait to go to Florida after the trial?
I think it's just a question of, like, he sees that this life is, like, destroying his family. Like, his son is a fucking junkie, and, his wife sucks. And he's just like, you know, half of this is my fault, you know? And he is like, we have the money, and all that it would take to free them from this toxic environment is me dying. And, that's the decision he makes, which is, I don't know. If I were in that position, I'd do the same thing, dude.
I don't know. I thought his idea about buying a townhouse and, you know, waiting it out for a year, hoping that Tony eventually, you know, has a change of heart. That seemed like a good plan in the moment, but.
Yeah, I agree. Also, couldn't you just join, like, don't they have, like, branches in Florida?
Yeah, you got to apply for a transfer with
apply for a transfer and just, you know, be a part of the Florida mafia
with the wet pussy Masseria, the mafia HR manager.
So that's the end of Gene. The other storyline, we got a bit of Carm and her, you know, continuing journey trying to have a spec house.
Yeah, or more more importantly, I think the main storyline is that she and Tony have discovered sushi.
Sushi.
Yeah.
which
is a great, like, mid-aughts suburban New Jersey storyline. Which, like, is funny because, like, the beginning of the show, like, I think David Chase finally addressed my natural confusion of, like, do these people ever eat anything besides, like, the 15 Italian American dishes that we all grow? Like how many times can you have chicken marsala in 1 month? And finally he has them discovering some ethnic food, which was nice.
I think I had sushi for the first time in 2006 as well. And my my boss at the marketing company, at the home improvement company, was like, you got to go to this place in Montclair, Sushihana. It's great. It's just called Sushihana.
There's something about, not necessarily Italian-American suburban, but just any suburban, like, upper-middle-class person kind of discovering sushi. It's like, oh, finally, I can spend more money on food. And, like, you know, there's something, because you could tell he feels very fancy. He's, like, pulling up a piece of fish, and he's like, $40 for a piece of fish that they flew first class. And it's like, man, like this is any upper middle class person, a suburban dad is going to be like, you know, I'm eating like a king over here. Yeah. You know, it's
they also double down on it where they have them. They do have them at Vesuvio and they're all complaining about the food. Like, boy, Artie's really fallen off. He keeps making the same shit. It's not even as good. It's like the meat's dry now.
Where'd they get this bread? The bread museum? That was a great joke. Yeah, it's one of my favorites. So they're eating at a sushi bar called Noro, and like Carm is telling Tony about this nightmare that she's having where Aide was visiting her spec house. I have a clip of that scene together.
So I had a nightmare the other night. Did I wake you up?
No.
Aide was in the house. My spec house.
Where's she gonna buy it?
We were just talking.
I wonder where she is.
Aide.
Told you, she probably met some guy.
Not call anyone for over a year?
What's this? There's sauce on the shrimp.
Shiromi tekamaki salmon with tomato.
You know, Jimmy Petril, the rat that gave up John, was like an uncle to him. His father's compadre. Why do you think I toss at night? Ain't just the apnea.
I noticed you haven't been taking your antidepressants.
And yet the bonefish are back in season. She count our blessings kind of year I just had.
Celebrating your financial success at a sushi bar like you're eating prime rib is very funny to me.
I also like, well, one thing I noticed that's changed in this season is just how much louder James Gandolfini's breathing is. Like, I mean, he was always like a good like breathing actor, but now it's in like Dolby surround every time he's in a scene.
I mean, and that's kind of a storyline happening in this episode is his, I guess, dramatic weight gain that has happened. Now, for some reason with James Gandolfini, he does not feel fat. I know he is fat, but like, there's something about the shape of his body where I don't see like, oh, that's a big fat man. I just see like I see a wide, strong man. I don't know why. But all of this sushi is really taking a toll. He keeps going back to, he eats at Noro alone at one point. And this is, I think, my favorite scene in the episode. He weighs himself on a scale and sees that he's 285 pounds. And then he takes off his shoes and he steps back on the scale, and then he gets off the scale again and he takes off his pants, and then he weighs himself a third time and now it's 280. And then the next shot is him going, all right, like the fact that he's like, you know, was wearing like, you know, five. Well, if you minus the shoes and minus the pants, I'm actually a pretty good weight. Like I loved watching him struggle with his weight.
Now I'm only 60 pounds from my target weight. That's
great. Yeah, exactly. I looked at it as like, oh, 5 pounds, huh? Well, I'm gonna eat 5 pounds of sushi tonight.
I mean, sushi is probably the healthiest thing that Tony's ever eaten on the show.
Yeah, that is true. But all that rice, you can get fat from sushi.
Yeah.
You have to have a lot of money, but it's possible. So Carmela is trying to get her spec house to move forward, and you know she has the scene with her dad Hugh, in which the inspector affirms the stop work order, and because he used pine, and I don't know anything about construction. Are you guys construction people at all?
I not really, but I guess it was utility grade pine instead of building grade pine. It was just the grade that he used.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
so
he needs to get that Doug fir. He didn't have the Doug fir, and that was a big no-no.
Yeah. So you know,
he did the thing where he's like, "Why don't you talk to so and so,
Pudgy Walsh?"
And the guy's like, "Yeah, that guy's retired. Like we don't even do that anymore." I think that's kind of a common customer service experience nowadays, where you know you try to rely on the human touch somehow, and then the person who's in charge is like, no, we don't do human touch anymore. Like no one does face-to-face things anymore. Yeah. You have to abide.
I don't know the names of my bosses, like three bosses removed.
The algorithm says that you can't use this wood, and
right. Yeah, and, you know, so Carm is, like, really trying to pressure Tony, like, yeah, call the inspector, and I do love the scene in which he is still not called the inspector, but gives her a car, just to kind of get her to shut up a little bit. Her storyline kind of ends with she's having dinner at Vesuvio with Angie Bombancero, and then as they leave, Angie has a Corvette that she bought with her own money, and Carmela is jealous, which is
she's also doing like the perfect she's doing the perfect like middle-aged housewife move thing, where she wants to have her own job, but like any feasible source of income for her requires like hundreds of thousand dollars worth of startup capital. Like she's
right,
like she wants to separate herself from Tony and the mafia somehow, but like everything that she does is still underwritten by all of Tony's crimes in the end.
Yeah, right. Yeah, she can't go get like a bank loan, you know, and she's also, because she's like, you know, a high class, or I don't know, a upper middle class, you know, suburban white woman. Yeah, she's not going to, when she says she wants a job, she doesn't mean she wants to do fucking, you know, she's not gonna work at a Costco, you know, she doesn't want to like sit in an office, like she's you know,
she wants to open a candle shop on right in like Silver Lake or something.
Exactly It's called Fragrant Pussy. And she's not trying to have like a job. She's doing what everyone was doing in 2006, really, which is trying to flip houses.
Yeah, she can't really even fathom a normal job. And that's kind of the way things are now. Like this show was sort of set at the beginning of the end of like American Empire, and now we're like well into the aftermath of that. Like this was like the first time that you couldn't call in a favor to the house inspector.
Right.
And now we're like to the point where we so definitively don't produce anything that the latest fad is to just own like a JPEG that you say is valuable somehow.
You have to mint an NFT in order to be like, oh, I have an asset.
Yeah, the only thing you
they're called NFTs, Tony.
Yeah. The only thing you can imagine,
look at this monkey. It's worth 24 Ethereum.
This could be the new Disney. This could be the new Mickey Mouse. You know, Mickey Mouse is an animation cell too.
Yeah. Push strung out gorillas. Everyone, push strung out gorillas. Yeah. It's the new Wibistics.
Gary V says they're very profitable, Tony.
You know, AJ would have like a friend who has a bunch of NFTs and a big.
Yeah, he's got a Slipknot NFT. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the Cusimanos next door are like, you know, they're mining ether from their home, you know.
Yeah. My neighbor was talking to me about NFTs a couple weeks ago, and he's got a wife and two kids, and he was like, the way he was talking about it, he was like, well, yeah, you could screenshot it, sure, but you could also take a picture of yourself in front of somebody's mansion and say, this is my mansion, when it's really not.
There's lots of things you could do, man.
It's like, yeah, you can actually do stuff inside a mansion, like live there, as opposed to this is literally just the thing that you look at.
Not owning anything except for digital pictures of someone else's property. That's the world we live in. And yeah, so the other thing that's going on in this episode, there's a little bit of like the mafia stuff that is happening. Is you've got Phil Leotardo is now basically running New York while Johnny Sack is in prison. Jenny is visiting him, showing him pictures of fucking, you know, his beautiful fat daughter and his and his skinny daughter. And he loves his family, which is very adorable.
I like that people finally acknowledged that Phil Leotardo really does have a jerk-off face.
Is it really something, isn't he, with that fucking jerk-off face?
The eyebrows, I fucking can't stand
them. Agent Harris, where you been? Got some new Federale in my rear view for 6 months.
Actually, I've been in Pakistan.
Get the fuck out.
Seriously, I was transferred to terrorism.
The terror squad, huh? What'd you lose a little weight?
You look good. Atkins, right?
I caught a parasite over there. Doctors don't know what it is.
What do they eat, tabbouleh?
Actually, that's why I'm here. I've been dying for a Satriali's veal palm hero.
Fuck him. I hope that parasite eats his asshole up.
Oh, man. That is just like primo fucking Chris Moltisanti content. Just hating people's faces and hoping that, you know, parasites eat out people's assholes.
I mean, I feel like that's a really relatable thing to say about Phil Leotardo, is that you just don't like his face.
Yeah, I mean, he does look like the Shah of Iran, and people pointing that out, they are correct in that. And he does have the bushiest eyebrows, I think, in mafia history.
And to a broader point, I think that, like, the Christopher character, he always rides the line between like believable dumb and like Homer Simpson dumb. Like it's sometimes they sort of rely on him being stupid as a crutch for like easy jokes. And I think this episode really rides that line really well, where you know, they're in the they're in the hospital with Hesh and his son.
I have that exact clip. Hold on.
My son-in-law and me, we're having dinner Sunday in a Chinese restaurant near Mill Basin. We get jumped by three guys in a Lexus.
Jinx did this?
What are you trying to be fucking funny? You want to smack in the mouth?
What? I was serious.
I was serious. I'm not even sure I understand how he could have inferred that, other than they were leaving the Chinese restaurant. Is it like Chinese people drive Lexuses?
My take is that Christopher is a moron, and any conversation
just wasn't paying attention.
Any conversation, he's only sort of half paying attention. So he like goes to he jumps to whatever like the last word that he heard.
That's amazing. That was fucking great. But yeah, so that the storyline there is like Hesh's son-in-law Eli gets beat up by some people who are part of Jerry Torchiano's crew, the hairdo, who's some guy we've never met and I don't think we're going to see much of in the future. And it's just kind of, this is a kind of a red herring in the episode, because I feel like, you know, David Chase is writing this episode in a way where he knows that like the hogs that he hates love the mafia shit. You know, they love watching a guy get beat up. They love, you know, hey, you, we got to do a sit down with the fucking hairdo and work this out. And like, and you're wondering like, oh, where's this going? Is this season going to be about like this fucking war with Hesh versus, you know, the hairdo and whatnot? And it's all a fucking red herring for what the episode is actually about, which is Junior Soprano losing his fucking mind and thinking that Pussy Malenga is after him. So that's the final storyline we're gonna get into.
Right. And just to Mike's point about like the heart of the Sopranos was the characters not finding out these huge secrets and sort of not knowing things that we know, and they sort of undid that in The Many Saints in Newark. Like by that same point, like one of the things that I always appreciated about The Sopranos is that There were these moments of genuine like fear and violence that were scary and intimidating in the way that they were intended, but almost always they would cut that with some sort of like Three Stooges sort of mm-hmm. comedy of errors, like farce within right. that. And this episode was a great example because like they're beating him up. They're threatening to burn these two guys alive.
Yeah, basically. They're trying to burn the Jews. They're trying to gas the yeah. Jews.
And in the midst of this, he just gets hit by a random taxi, like a slapstick bit, like just completely out of nowhere in the middle of yeah. it. And so, yeah. you know, he's legitimately had grievous injury done to him, but not because he was getting beat up by the mafia, just because no. he ran out in the street and got hit by a car.
Yeah, and even the guy, you know, the enforcer who, like, was there and was beating him up was like, for the record, that was a hit and run.
Yeah.
It's like, listen, I was trying to beat the shit out of this Jew, but I wasn't trying to, like, put him this much in the hospital, you know. I'm not cruel.
Yeah.
It's that is, like, the thing that I think often goes underrated on The Sopranos is that like most of the violence is funny, and that's why I enjoy it. I don't enjoy it because it's cool, which is one of the reasons why, like you said, like many saints, there's just not enough jokes. I need my deaths to have jokes in them. Like yeah, Gene yeah. didn't just hang himself, he pissed himself.
Right.
That's what made the scene, you know? Tony, we open the Tony Jr. storyline with Tony is like digging in Junior's backyard looking for money that he believes that he hid somewhere. And it's just like completely clear. Like it's been a few seasons of watching him like kind of go downhill cognitively. And this is now, I think, the point in which like Tony is realized that he is completely lost his like he's lost touch with reality. And Janice is suggesting rightly, I think, in my opinion, that they put him in Green Grove, like put him in a fucking nursing home. Like this guy needs to be taken care of. And Tony is like completely flipped on his opinion on nursing homes. Cause he's like, you see what they did to Ma. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I don't know how his opinion shifted so hard on.
It's just
on
he's grown up in an environment where everybody like falsely mythologizes their family members as soon as they passed. Like
that's so true.
Like Livia, yeah. You know, was this sort of like hectoring wife, and then as soon as Johnny died, she's like, "Oh, he was a saint.
He was a
and
saint."
Like, what
yeah.
are you talking about? Like you were. Like all you did yeah. was nag him and talk shit when you were alive, but as soon as yeah. they die, they become a saint.
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny because he is definitely like I don't know, he's regressed psychologically, and he is now back to kind of like blaming himself for what happened with him and his mom who like tried to kill him, and there's like the scene that I love so much where it's one of my other favorite scenes in this episode is like Tony just picking on AJ for no real reason, just like finding something to be mad about. And then like in front of him taking a break from picking on him about like giving a jacket to a friend, taking a break to lavish praise upon Meadow, and then going back to basically calling AJ a dipshit for giving, you know, his jacket away, and then reminding him that like family is the only thing that matters. Like
all your friends testify against you in court. Remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember that friends are just future snitches. The only people who matter are your family. And it's like your family literally tried to kill you multiple yeah. times. And yeah, so he has this scene with Melfi, kind of a strange scene, in my opinion, in which Melfi talks about how he tried to smother his mother with a pillow.
Yeah, I was like, how does she know that? Where did,
how does she know?
Was she watching the previous season?
Does she watch The Sopranos?
She has HBO. She's the only character in this that has HBO.
Yeah, so that was kind of strange. And then also, like, I think one of a great moment in the scene between Tony and Melfi is back on her like unreconstructed Freudian shit, just like, this is all just about your mother. And he just like looks at his watch.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, oh, just the same scene over and over again with him and Melfi.
Stopped at a light yesterday. And I see this nanny, black girl, pushing a baby carriage. And coming the other way is another one. With this old lady in a wheelchair, staring off into space.
The circle of life.
Circle jerk of life. Where's the dignity?
If you're lucky in the end, you can let go of your pride. Let your loved ones care for you.
I'd rather they hold a pillow over my face.
I find it interesting you would say that. You tried to smother your mother with a pillow.
The fuck I did? I grabbed a pillow, but it was just to keep my hands occupied.
Have you considered getting your uncle some live-in help?
Well, we got a girl comes in day. She's from Trinidad.
Does he have the means for assisted living?
Didn't you just say to let your loved ones take care of you?
If it's feasible.
Well, he's my uncle.
I don't think that's what we're talking about.
What are we talking about?
The fact that you still, after all this time, cannot accept you had a mother who didn't love you.
Is that what this is about, Melfi? Again,
Melfi was friends with Melfi was friends with Philly Parisi. Actually, they would.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Big Melfi. He's like,
I mean, it's just like, oh
look,
god!
When you got a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Everything looks like a nail, dude. It's just
Floyd.
Like, it's just, and it's like, I'm not saying I don't totally get what she's saying. I mean, there is a connection there in which like he is now. He's doing what he always does, which is like pretend like in order to be a good person, I have to martyr myself for my family because that's what a good boy would do. Just like he would with his mom. You know, I got to take it on the chin every time she destroys my brain with her mean, manipulative, you know, shit that she does and says. But it's like, you know, if I'm Tony, I'm just like, oh, my God, I cannot pay another dime. For you to give me the same analysis over and over.
Yeah, how does knowing my mother didn't love me help me in my current life?
What ends up happening is, Junior gets worse and worse. Tony, while he's like sailing on the Stugats, he gets a call from his younger sister, Barbara.
Janice has a kid through what I can only imagine was the magic of modern medical science.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just...
you saying I don't fuck my wife?
Don't, I told you. I try to fuck her every day, I do. But she don't listen. No, like, she is the opposite of... Like, Barbara is concerned about Junior, is saying, like, you know, Junior is, like, saying some wild shit. He's very agitated. He's very angry. And Janice is just on some, like, same old selfish shit. You know, they can't look after Junior today because they have to go to some school meeting for a 1 year old. and then Tony decides, fuck it, I'm gonna do it myself. Goes over to Uncle Junior's house, who is just lost his upper teeth and is just in a really sorry, sad state, and is complaining about Pussy Malanga and whatnot. And Tony puts on some Artie Shaw and starts cooking some pasta, because when you have no teeth, pasta is a very good dish. And I guess while he's up there, you know, Junior forgets who he's been talking to this whole time, and his paranoia kind of just reaches a fever pitch. And he... finally, after six seasons, shoots Tony right in the fucking stomach.
10 minutes, Uncle Joe.
Who's down there?
Artie Shaw. 10 minutes.
Don't go anywhere.
I'm not. I'm right here.
Is there nothing about?
Comes a rainstorm. Put your rubbers on your feet.
You got any wine?
Got sada, Malanga.
Again, the violence on this show is so funny, because not only does he, like, when he shoots him in the stomach, he, like, falls over, like, two household objects. He does, like, the funniest pratfall. Like, first he knocks over, like, the record player, and then, like, a stool, and then a chair. It's just, like, he keeps tripping. He trips three times before he actually hits the ground.
Even earlier in the episode, Eugene throwing the candy dish into the wall was very funny.
Yeah.
Just picking up the first thing you could find and chuck it into the wall.
Just mad at
doing heroin.
Mad at his meathead son for yelling at him. And just like, oh, what's around, and throws the fucking, yeah.
I think the outstanding question there is, like, does Junior still shoot Tony if Tony wasn't sarcastic with him when he asks who's down there?
I mean, I don't know. I think so. I think at that point he is completely lost touch with reality. So he doesn't, you know, he's thinking that it's Malenga no matter what's happening. But yeah, that scene is, like, it's long and drawn out and fucking amazing, because, like, you've got Junior, like, running upstairs, and he's like, oh, fuck, I have this gun. And his, like, mafia instincts are trying to, like, kick in the action, but he's old as shit. So it's just, like, under the bed. He throws it under the bed, and then he hides in a closet and starts crying. It's like, it's really good. And then Tony fucking, you know, he tries to pick up the phone, and he ends up ripping it out of the wall, and then he has to crawl his ass, you know, to the living room or to the kitchen, and then calls 911. And we end the episode with him having successfully called 911 and passing out on the floor. And that, they say to this day that pasta is still boiling. So, yeah. And that is, and that's where we end it. Junior has shot Tony, and we don't know what's going to happen. Is he dead? Is he gonna live? Is there going to be, like, a 3-episode dream sequence? Probably not.
That would be annoying.
Why would anyone watch that? But we will see the next time there is an episode.
Well, time will tell.
Time will tell what will happen. Okay, real quick, I said my favorite scenes. You know, I liked AJ being called an idiot for lending a jacket to a friend. Do you either you guys have, like, a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, a scene we didn't talk about?
We talked about my favorite scene, which is he's really something, huh, with that jerk off face. Like, that's a classic line. Least favorite, either the William S. Burroughs voiceover or the fact that no one calls Janice out for being really old to have a baby. Like, no, like, this is, like, the fat people get it every, like, 3 seconds. They never forget that they're fat on the show, but no one ever says, like, how the fuck did Janice have a kid? Isn't she, like, 45?
They could have done IVF.
No, I'm sure, but I feel like someone would have said something.
Mike, any scene you want to talk about specifically?
I think I like Eugene's wife telling him to kill Tony.
Yeah.
Which is, like, interesting. And the whole thing of, like, you know, Eugene's probably built this nice life for his family by doing crimes, and then his wife doesn't respect him and thinks he's, you know, like, she must think he's, like, a little worm. And that's, you know, you want the woman that you love to respect what you do. You know?
Yeah.
Somehow I found a woman who respects podcasting. I don't know.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Very few wives respect their podcaster husbands. And, you know, it's the same thing with the mafia. I mean,
she's
it's
like, why
clear
put
that
a bullet in his head. And she's like, Tony's a piece of shit. Like, why are you letting him, you know, have all this power over you? And you can tell he just feels so emasculated.
Yeah, Francesca says all the time, when I only get half the Patreon money, she says, Matt, why don't you just put a bullet in his head? You know? So,
nice. You got an OG there.
The real gangster.
That's what you get for being engaged to an Italian.
I know, seriously. She is too Italian. Real gangster this episode, I don't know, the dementia. I'll say that. Dementia is the real gangster. And if I had to grade this episode, and of course I could give it any grade at all, I would give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Yeah, I'd say solid B+.
It's all B plus. All right, Mike, what would you give this episode?
I know you guys always do that, but I think this episode really is a solid B plus.
That's fair. That's fair. It's a good grade.
Yeah.
Solid B plus episode of The Sopranos and a solid A plus episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. Michael Racine. Do people say Racine?
Racine is the Italian.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Yeah. Racine. Mike, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Twitter at Mike Racine, Instagram, Racine.Mike, and check out my podcast, The Sit Down.
Yeah. And, catch him in
Atlanta at the Roll Call Theater, November 19th.
Check out him and Adam Friedland at the Roll Call Theater. It's going to be a fun show. Patreon.com/Frogcast, where the $8 tier gets you a shout out. Okay. Vince.
Oh, boy.
We took, our normal, month-long season break. And in that time, we had a lot of people bump up to $8. So this
Do
is
they
where
get a shout out every week?
Every week. Oh, no. They get a shout out. They get one shout out. Yeah. Okay. And then they should stay at $8 because we love them.
But they
can also bump down to $5. But please don't actually bump up to $10, and then I will fly to your city and suck your dick. Vince, I give you a name. You give them a mafia name. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm going to try and maintain the stamina through all of these. But yeah.
Okay. All right. First one, Sylvester Gatto.
Hey, Sylvester Gatto. More like Sylvester the cat. We call him Big Pussy.
Yeah, there's, I was going to say, you have to.
Yeah.
All right. Harry Evans.
Harry Evans. We call this guy Harry Pussy.
All right. I see what's going to happen. Next one is L. Anderson. She actually paid us in the Norwegian krone.
Mm.
So I think she is Norwegian. I don't know.
Yeah. We'll call her Weege.
All right. L. Weege Anderson. Tom Havey.
Havey, why don't you have a Coke and a smile? We call him Smiley. That's a Cholo nickname that I gave him.
Yeah, Smiley is a Cholo nickname. Mm-hmm. Zachary Coop.
Hey, Chicky.
All right,
you know,
I like it.
Chicken Coop. Yeah, whatever.
No, I got it immediately.
Yeah.
Charlie Vinopal.
Vino. Hey, we call this guy the Wino.
All right. this one is was just. This is not an S. Marge H. 10151.
I'm gonna call him. I'm gonna call him the Egg because that sounds like the Twitter handle of someone who had an egg avatar.
That is a bot. Brooks Rittle.
Brooks. We call this guy the Babbler because he's like a
babbling brook. No,
yeah,
I got it.
Yeah, you got it. No, you got it.
Liam Wilde. We've got 10 more.
Okay.
I'm so sorry, Mike.
Don't worry about it. It's not like I have a family or anything.
Liam Wilde. We call him Horse. Yeah, why not?
Sure. Sarah Bell.
Sarah Bell. We call her Smelly. Because, Bell Smelly. We got it,
I'll call her the Brain because, like, cerebral, I don't know. Mm-hmm. All right. This is why I don't
female
do
Female listener.
Yeah. Matthew Gone.
Yeah. Gone Fishing.
All right. Cody Whittington.
We call this guy,
Uh-oh. Your brain's broke.
My brain's broke.
Cody Whittington.
We call him HTML because, he's coding.
He's coding. All right. Jeffrey Barta.
We call this guy Simpson. Bart Simpson.
Yep, got it. Felix Clock.
Yeah.
Well, that's.
We
call him the Clock Sucker.
All right.
All right. I'm sorry, Felix. He's Felix the Cat. We call him Big Pussy. Addison Firth.
Addison Girth.
Yep.
Oh, there we go. Addison
Girth. Girthy.
We call him Girthy.
Girthy, yeah.
Patrick Purcell.
We call him Percy.
Okay.
Girthy and Percy, Big. We call him Big Percy.
big prayer sheet. Gregor Thompson.
Kafka.
All right.
Yep.
The Reverend Dr. Michael Strange.
We call him Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay. Ian King.
No, oh, that's obvious. Kingo from the Eternals. Everybody's favorite Eternals.
Everyone's
character.
Favorite.
Yeah.
Okay. Henning Fogg.
We call him Carl the Fog.
All right. Frank Davis.
We're going to call him Raiders because his family owns the Raiders. Yep.
No, I got it.
Yeah,
the Davis family. Andrew Boyle.
The Zit.
And lastly, Jesse Eldridge. Cleaver.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Mm-hmm. We call him Uncle Jesse. I don't know.
All right, Uncle Jesse. That's good. He'll love that.
Uh-huh.
All right, everyone. Those were your $8 pot yourself a shout out patrons.
Whew, that was the lightning Patreon round. I'm going to go take a nap after that many.
Yeah, you got to take a nap. Patreon.com/Frogcast. All the bonus episodes are on there. They're all fantastic. We're talking about things other than The Sopranos. It's The Frogcast, but on Patreon. Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
Sopranos, season 6, episode 1. Tony is back.
Gabagoo, 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 soprano. Dream of gabagool, dream of gabagool. Don't need calls right up and passes down. Leave some pot of water boiling out. Is this the end of Tony Soprano? Dream of gabagool, dream of gabba, dream of gabagool. Dream of gabagool, goo, dream of gabagool, goo, goo. Dream of gabagool, goo, goo. Dream of gabagool.
Save big on your Labor Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.